Okay, so now we're back, and we are going to learn about references, and that is how we link two data objects in the data store together, with the goal of not, you see Sally and Chuck were talking in 2008 as well. So the goal, of course, is, we don't want these strings to be used multiple places in case we have to change something, like if a person gets a vanity ID or gets married or whatever. So we want to know when we post a chat message, who posted the chat messages. And so if you sort of draw a post-it note diagram or you're sitting in front of a whiteboard, what you will do is you'll basically say, we want to link this chat message, these chat messages to Sally and this chat message to CSEV, and we want to make these links rather than actually storing the string CSEV or Sally in the chat message, we want to store a link. It is a link from one data store object to another data store object. And we do this to mark them as belonging to somebody. And so this leads us to some cool new exam-worthy terminology, and that is the difference between keys. So there are three kinds of keys that we tend to use. In the login account, we've used two of these. The logical key is the key that makes sense. So CSEV, which is what we logged in, that's the logical key. It's the key the outside world understands as the way to look up a particular data object in the data store. So logical key is the key that sort of the world logically thinks of as the way to find it. The database also assigns its own key. It's a big, ugly, pretty much random number. And it uses that to decide where the data belongs. That's real important to it. The database cares about them. They're ugly, they're long, but they have meaning to the database. They choose them, they design them to be efficient and clever and all these things. But as far as we're concerned, it's a big blob of stuff. It's opaque and unique. And so those are the kinds of things that every data entity has, though at least the ones we built so far, logical key and primary key. The third kind of key, which is what we're going to talk about in this lecture, is the reference key. When we make a field in an object, and we make that specifically for the purpose of pointing to other objects. Another word for a reference key is a foreign key, because it's a key within one object that points to a foreign object, some other faraway object that's not in this object. So if we look at our user has three properties, account, password, and name. They're all strings. And we can create a new user. So let me get out of mirroring mode here. So kind of our logical structure for this is the user has an account, password, and a name, and the account is a logical key. Logically, this is what we think is in there. This is what we've requested to have put in there, and we're going to be doing lots of lookups on account. That's what we're going to use as our key. That's how we, the outside world, and if my name changes from CSEV to Dr. Chuck, well, I'll change that, but that just means we have to use that new thing to look it up. But what's really going on is there is an additional field that the database has added for us, and that is the primary key. It made it up, it's random, it's big, it's ugly. It's not something we care about, but it is something we can look at. And so there's this fourth field that we didn't ask to be put in, but has been put in for us. And when we go through the code that creates a user in memory, sticks it in the database, we can actually retrieve and ask for the key of that particular thing. And we're going to store that in the session. So we store the account in the session, but we also store the key in the session. If you remember, the session is like a dictionary. It's anything you want, so we're going to have a new key in the session called user key. And in that, we're going to store the key of the user, the user's record, or the user object in the database. Okay? If you want, you can also, the put call returns as its return value the key. And so that's another way. It's equivalent to asking for the key later, but you can just retrieve the key when you do the put. Say, put this guy in the database. Oh, and by the way, give me back the key that you stored it as. Okay? Now, this primary key, it's ugly and it's nasty and you don't get to choose it, but it's screamingly fast. Okay? And that's part of the reason that we store it. Because the database can generally look up objects by their key faster than anything else. So that logical key of a count, it can look that up pretty fast, but the primary key is really fast. And so if you possibly can, if you know exactly what object you're going to do, you store the primary key in session, use the primary key to pull it back. So if we're going to be on every request response cycle pulling this user object back in from the database, it's better to store the key. We're also going to store the account so that we can put up good-looking messages, but we're also storing the key so we can look them up really fast. Does that make any sense? So now we have two things in the session, their name and their key. We can also get the key back when we retrieve an object using a query. So if you recall, here we have this query. This is the login check, the check-in login, where we're going to do a DB query of user objects. We're going to filter it to see if it matches the account, and we're going to match the password as well. So these are filters that are ANDed together. And then we're going to do a query fetch, only going to ask for one, and then we get back results is a list of user objects. So we can check its length as a quick way to know whether we got one or not. If the length of that result is greater than zero, it should either be one or zero. We're either going to get one or we're not going to get one. And in this case, it's got to match both account and password. We're going to either get one or not get one. If we get one, we're going to pull out the sub-zero, the first element in the list, is a user object. Again, this is just a variable I made up that happens to be very conveniently named. And I'm logging this person in if we got a successful login, and I'm going to put in the account into username, and I'm going to retrieve from the retrieved user object its key value, calling the key method in the user object. So this is another way to get the key back. You can get the key back for any user object, but this is the one we've got. And so as part of the login, we want now to have two things in session, the key and the account. Okay? Yeah? I'm going to guess, so let me bring up some code. That's a good question, by the way. Okay. These are the lines you're asking questions about. Self.session, and you're saying, which self is that? Okay. So, that's that self. So, every time you received a post message, the framework creates an instance of your login handler and routes the post message to your login handler. If you were handling simultaneously two post messages, you would have two login handlers kind of running their code at the same time if you were a very busy application. And so that's where it makes another copy of your login handler for each post that it, at the same moment. If they're really slow, it just runs one, that finishes, then it gets another one, it runs another one. But if you're running a bunch of them, you could have several login handlers sort of flying at the same time. That self is the way to know that it's inside this little bit of code, it's this one, and inside this little bit of code, it's this one. And that's what that self, that's why self is everywhere in this thing, because multiple objects, multiple handlers could be running at the same time if you're really truly simultaneously processing a lot of requests. And so when if I created a global variable called session, and I put my session in it, and I had two of them running at the same time, and there was this global variable up here, then the first one would start and set the global variable session, and the second one would start and crush the global variable session, and your program would be very random, and you'd change identities pretty, you know. You'd think you're logging yourself out, and you'd end up mistakenly logging someone else out who thinks they're logging in. And so self is to contextualize all these variables within sort of an instance of a handler. And that's why you say self-session here and self-session there, to scope it within an instance of class login handler. Okay? See, now we're getting to the point where like all of these lectures start rolling together, including that you might have to go back to like chapter 5 and read some of that object-oriented stuff again. Strangely, we have an exam coming up, which affords you an excellent opportunity to review chapter 5. I love how I planned that. So actually working on the exam will help you on this assignment. So I feel better about that, even though I feel bad about giving you 2.5 weeks to work on this assignment. Okay, so to log out, if you recall, the log out trick is just delete all the things from the session. We got to remember to delete both the username and the user key from the session. That's just sort of like bookkeeping to make sure that everything gets handled. So we have to remove both. So the whole purpose of that was to get to the point where when we're logged in, we have this username and we have the user key sitting around. Well, why did we want to do that? Well, we wanted to do that so we could make references. We need the user's key so that when we make chat messages, we can indicate which user so that the current logged in. So you notice when I did the demo, I logged into CSEV, typed in a few chat messages, then I logged into Sally, typed in a chat message, and I logged back in and back out. And what I was really doing is making it so that CSEV would own some chat messages and Sally would own some chat messages to make it more interesting. So when we're making a new object, we can put a field in there called a reference field, right? It's a reference type, a foreign key. And it's going to capture the user, current logged in user's key as we make a chat message. If you store account strings in the chat message, then experienced programmers will mock you terribly. So just learn this technique so you don't get mocked. It's called database normalization. It's the notion that we don't put strings more than one place. We put keys more than one place, but we don't put strings more than one place. It also has a lot to do with efficiency and changeability and not wasting storage. Although sometimes those keys look really big, they're actually very efficiently stored. So, we have a new type. So, we have a user model. We have a chat model, chat message model. It extends database.model, and it has a string property, and it has a reference property. The text is a string property. The user is a reference property. And we're going to throw in this created date just to show off. And it's a date time property. And as a matter of fact, we're going to just not even have to set it. We're going to tell the App Engine model to set it for us every time we touch this thing, set created date appropriately. So we've this auto-populate. You can go read all the documentation if you want. This created is just to show off. Well, I mean, it's part of our user interface, but it's also to show off. Okay. So if we look at this picture, we have our user, which has a logical key, which is the account name that we're logging in. That's the CSEV. The database adds a primary key. If we look at the chat message, it's got some text and created date. And then we have a user object, and that user object, the user attribute, is a pointer to a some other object. It doesn't have to be a user, but we're going to make it be a user. But it is, don't, you know, in this text is blah, 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 blah. In this date, it's, you know, November 12th. Here, it's pointer to another thing stored in the same database. That's what it's really thinking there. And that's what DB reference property means. I will store keys in here. And that's when I did that little example. It was bogus because it didn't look like a key. It says, that is not a key. You don't know what keys are. Okay. So in the top, I tend to put all of my models at the beginning. So I'll add right below user a chat message, model, reference property, string property, date, time property. And in my post, this is in my chat handler. See, I'm giving you less and less detail because you can make the chat handler now in your head. So this is the post method of the chat handler. We grab the session. We pull the message from the form field. And then we create a chat message object in memory. Text is the message variable. And the user is self.session.userKey. We are retrieving the key of the current logged in user from the session and then using that to populate the user attribute of the chat message object. And that line gives us a chat object with a little pointer already pointed at the right spot and the text, and the creation date is done automatically for us. And then we call put to actually store it in the database. Since this is a reference property, this must be a key. A key looks kind of like a string, but it's not quite a string. This is where I need a clicker. See, I'm starting to realize I need clickers to know if you're getting this. Because the word seems simple enough. And I bet there's a pretty good chance that most of you are actually getting it. Just wish I knew for sure. Okay. So that's the code to store the chat message. It's kind of like another object, except we have this thing where we set the key of our little foreign user buddy. Now let's talk about the code to display the actual chat screen at the end of the post. So this is model view controller. The first thing we do in a post is we take the incoming chat message, we hook it up with the user, and we store it in the database. The next thing we do is produce the next screen. And the next screen is retrieve the chat messages, the most recent chat messages. So when I was running it, I would say like blah, blah, and it would click, and it looked like something just miraculously appeared. But what really happened was it's a full request response cycle, and just like this navigation appears to always be here, it's not. It's just produced in a way that makes it look identical so it doesn't bounce on our screen when we retrieve it. And the same is true when I type this. It is a full request response cycle. Post, then the output of the post looks all the same at the top, but the bottom part's changing. And so it looks like it's somehow, you know, magically dynamic. Now we'll actually make it magically dynamic later, but for now it's not magically dynamic. Every time I hit this, post, full request response cycle, full page comes back. So now we need to talk about how to produce this page. By now, I should not have to remind you that all the awesome stuff at the top comes from the base. Got to fix the base a bit, but we have to add maybe a new thing, but thankfully, we're not coding the base. We just keep using it over and over. Okay, so So we have to display that most recent list of chat objects. So this is very much like the members list of the previous example. So it's model view controller. So we start out, we update the model. If you remember, the first step I always said is update the model. So if we've got a post, and if we're in a post, so we're going to make a chat message, we're going to grab the user key out, we're going to store them in the database. But we don't stop there. We just fall right into the production of the next screen. So we are going to create a query. Give me a query of chat message objects stored in the database, and please sort them in reverse, that's what the minus sign means, reverse order of the created date. If you recall, the created date was this free thing. We said, oh, just put that in whenever I make one of these things, sneak in a date for me. Okay, so the created date is in there. We didn't do any work to put it in, but now we're using it to make them so they come in reverse order so that the newest ones show up at the top. And then this chat list is a list of chat objects, however many we got. We're asking only for the top 10, the 10 most recent. It's kind of like a Facebook wall, right? 10 most recent, backwards created order. And now we are going to render the chat screen and pass in the list of chat objects, conveniently named chat list, in my template. Yeah?
This is the post method in the chat handler.
Exactly. It is the post method in the chat handler, and the chat handler is the thing that responds when I hit that button, right? So slash chat is mapped to chat handler, and this is the post method of the handler linked to that slash chat URL. I keep going to the same URL because slash chat shows you the messages with a blank screen. When you post, it updates the messages, shows you the message again with a blank screen. So that's the chat, the post method of the chat handler. So kind of the only thing we got to do now is look at the chatscreen.htm and look at the code of how we actually render the chat messages from the chat list. So, it's not much. And it again follows very similarly from the previous example of the table of members. Now we're not going to use HTML tables here because it's not really a table. That would be tacky because it's not table, but it is a list. And so I use the same kind of thing. I've got this render variable called chat list, and I have a for loop that iterates through it, and chat is my iteration variable that will take on the successive values of each of the chat objects in the chat list. And to print out the chat text, I say chat dot, and then a element or a member of that object is dot text, which gives me the text. Okay? So this part is kind of like the members thing. But then we got this other syntax. And so what happens there is we don't want to give the chat user's key. We actually want to give the chat user's account. We have a chat object. It has an attribute of user, but the chat.user is actually a user object. So chat.user.acct is the account field in the user object that's pointed to by this chat object. This is called walking a reference. We are walking down a series of links from the object that we've got through another object that we refer to, and then we're looking into that object in one little statement. So chat.user is the associated user object, follows the reference. Chat.user.account is that actually account string. That's the account string. So that's CSEV or Sally. If you do chat.user, that's the blah, 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 long key thing. It actually won't even print as a long blah-gada-blah-gada key thing. You want to go through that and go into the field, the account field. So chat.user is an object because it's because the user field within chat is a reference. Chat.user.account.acct is a string because that's in there. So if we look, so this is a chat object. It's of type chat message. It's got some text. It's got a created date. Those are easy. Those are just things we get. And then when we say chat.user, it's like, let's switch from this object to that object. And then I can go in and pull that out. And so it makes it so that you can kind of follow these things right here with this little link that says chat.user.name.password. And so it's kind of like this extra little step to dereference that reference. Right? So chat.user is just this gobbledygook bit. Chat.user.whatever says go through it, into it, follow the reference, follow the link, and then you can access these variables directly using that. Any questions? Yeah. You mean this? No, and okay. So I keep calling them objects, they're calling them entities. Entities is actually what they call them. Entity and object is the same thing. So this is the key of the object. When they say entity key, I've been sort of mistakenly being more Python, call it object key. This is an entity. Their terminology for this is an entity. That's all the entities. Here's the key of the entity. This is the key of that other entity. Right. It would point to a different entity when we made that change, right? So if I go back to the one where I changed it, which I think it was this one, I changed the entity key. This points to a user's particular entity key, and that points to Chuck. I'm not sure I'm understanding your question.
I'm asking if I copy a different user key.
Yes.
Into a different entity. Like I have two entities.
Now, are you talking about two user entities and trying to change their keys? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, hang on. Like, I want to take this entity key and then go make it be Sally's. I don't get to change the entity key of the entity itself, but I can change it in references, right? So the moment that I created Sally, the database picked the entity key for Sally and will never change it. I'd have to delete Sally and re-add Sally, but then it would actually, all those links would be broken then. Because if I added Sally back in, it would pick a new key and all those connections would be broken. So I don't get to edit. I mean, I'm sitting here on Sally, and I can edit anything about Sally, but I can't edit this. If I go to a chat message, I can edit that, but that's not this entity's key. The chat message has a key as well. This is a user key, and I can change that if I want, but then it changes which user account it's pointing at. You can change the friends keys. Is that what you said?
The reference
keys. Oh, the reference keys. Absolutely, you can change them. Absolutely. They're just data that you can change like anything else. And you could do it in Python with blah, 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 you know, key user equals and put a different key in. So it would change like in. I mean, I can change it in this user interface, but I can also change it in Python with a very simple syntax.
Okay.
And that's perfectly happy, right? That'd be saying, oh, I'm going to move this thing from one course to another or from one user to another. That'd be perfectly legitimate. Yeah, it's a good question. So the question is, what happens when I delete a user and we've got all these lovely links all put together? So, Sally, sorry, but you're going away again. So let's just take a look at the chat messages and take a look. They're still there. Let's see, that one's not Sally anymore. I think this one's Sally. And I think that's Sally. It's not Sally. Did Sally say hi? Okay, let's see what happens. Okay, so that's what happens when we run it in the admin console. Let's just take a wild guess that it's going to look quite similar in our Python code. And again, if we just look at the code, reference property failed to be resolved, if we look at the code, and I go on my template, I am just being very explicitly saying, go in the chat, go look up the corresponding user object, and when you find the corresponding user object, look up account. And it's trace backing at the moment. It's trying to look up the object, so it's not there. Perfectly, you know, you can even stick some try catches in there. Go like, whoa, what happened? It's gone. But generally, you write your program so that they stay correct and, you know, you delete the chat message. You keep it clean. We're hacking in the background to make it unclean. But you generally write your program so that it wouldn't break like that. Yeah, I don't think we can put a try except block in a template, but we could check them. We could check them all in our Python code, and then we could write try and except blocks. Okay. So that's the picture of that. We're almost done. You're almost running out of your chances to ask questions. So the last thing that is a little weird on this is this bit about chat.created. And it says chat.created. If you recall, chat.created is a date field. This little vertical bar stuff, it's a formatting directive. It says don't print this out in the normal ugly format you were going to print it out. Print it out, you know, with the month, day, and year in a nice format. That's all this is. But don't worry, how to do that won't be on the exam. Just use it. Makes it pretty. Okay.